the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. This episode is part two of our April J2 special with John Steele joining Stuart Smith for a pulse take on the second tier a quarter of the way through the season. If you missed part one, Steve Fryer, Jeff Osborne and Nick Bolton joined Stuart and myself for chats about Omiya, FC Ryukyu and Kyoto respectively. Please give it a listen if you can. All were interesting chats, if I do say so myself. Away we go with part two then. The J-Talk podcast starts now. Terrific to have the band back together for part two. John Steele on accordion. John, how are you?
Hi, Ben. Very well, thanks. I believe this will be our last show of the Heisei era, so let's make it a good one.
Yes, I jumped the gun last week thanks to Scott McIntyre's prompting, but I believe this episode, John, might actually be posted and be the first of the Reiwa era. So congratulations to you, and on percussion, congratulations to Stuart Smith. Welcome back, Stuart.
Oh, I have to do some more talking. Wow. Yeah, luckily I've just had another drink and I'm ready to...
oh, no.
Yeah, I'm ready to get back stuck into J2, so yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, we're only halfway home, Stuart, so and as we know, with the three of us together, yes, it's going to be a long night, but it's going to be a terrific chat, as it always is, talking about J2. John, we find ourselves with Mito still on top of the table after 11 games. They continue to defy expectations. They didn't score on the weekend, but it didn't matter because more than half the league didn't score either. A really wacky round of fixtures with 9 draws and 5 of them 0-0. So, at kickoff, Mito top of the table drawing 0-0 at home against Niigata. Well, they probably might have been disappointed with that at the end of the day, but they continue to set the pace.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not as smug as my last appearance because we talked about Mito and kind of the consensus was they've been known to start well in the past and then fall away. But yeah, they're still top of the pile and looking good. I do notice if you just look at the kind of naked stats. I just wanted to say the word naked. But they 6 wins but 5 draws. I think if you are inclined to think that they'll stick around in the top 6 for the duration, and they're going to have to find a way of avoiding so many draws. They have such a good defensive record, don't they? They've only conceded 4 in 11 matches, which is pretty remarkable. But yeah, I think if you start to see the number of draws, because they haven't lost yet, but they will lose games obviously as they go on, and then if they are not if they're drawing the same amount of games as they're winning, then I think you might find them sliding down. But they've been good. I did get a chance to see them once when they came to the capital and they played away at Tokyo Verde, which was the theme of the weekend. That was 0-0 as well. But they look pretty good. But I'm not sure. I didn't really see anything in that performance to suggest that they are kind of champion or promotion material. So yeah, credit to them for sticking around for 11 games, and long may it continue. But I do think we might see them slipping down as the rounds go on.
So, Stuart, Mito, they've doubled their points tally since the last J2 special. After at the end of March, they were fourth with 11 points. They now have 23 after 11 games. So, yeah, they just chug along. Are they doing anything special? Are they primed for a kind of a Ryukyu-esque slide down the table? By the time we reconvene at the end of May, what are the chances, do you think, that they will still be at the top, or let's say in the top 2 or 3?
Yeah, I think they probably will slip down the table a little bit, just because of the factors that John kind of brought to the table there. I mean, they will lose at some point. They're not going to be invincible in J2, and they need to kind of find a way to score more goals. But having said that, they're a pretty difficult team to play against. Like, they play the majority of their players 4-4-2. They set up well. They're physically strong throughout the spine of the team.
Yeah.
They've got a really good goalkeeper. Kenya Matu has done really well this year. And, you know, going through from centre-back to my midfield, and up front, we've got Shintaro Shimizu, who's on loan from Omiya, who's busy and he does well, and Kurokawa as well, who had a pretty quiet year goal scoring wise last year, but he's looks pretty sharp this year. He's always buzzing about, and it's they get the ball out wide quite well. They've got Kimura who plays on the left, who's got some good dead ball delivery on him, and so they're organized, they're coached well, and they're solid at the back. And you know, it's they will have to score more, but if you can kind of rely on the fact that you're going to be difficult to break down, then kind of your odds look good in J2. But I do think they'll be overtaken by teams with more firepower than them. But it's nice to see Mito doing well. And I hope they do stay up there for as long as possible. But eventually, possibly by the time we reconvene at the end of May, I would expect them to be possibly 6th or 7th, around that area. But I have been known to be wrong with predictions before, so it's, don't take that to the bank.
All right then. So yeah, terrific stuff from Mito. They remain unbeaten, the only team that can say that after 11 games. We mentioned with Steve Fryer that Omiya have been on a remarkable run. Coming into the weekend, it was 5 straight wins that had seen them rise to 2nd, but they slipped a spot back to 3rd, as we said in episode 1, after Yamagata won 1-0 away at Fukuoka in the early kickoff on Saturday. And to mention the odd results over the weekend, John, well, there were, game was the first game of the match day, and that was won away by Yamagata over Fukuoka. The last game that was played in match day 11 was won by Kanazawa away at Yamaguchi, but the 9 games in between were all drawn. So Yamagata took advantage of all those draws and moved up from 4th to 2nd, and after a somewhat sputtering start to the campaign, they have now appeared to have hit their straps, John.
I think I might have mentioned them as a potential sort of bolter or playoff sort of contender back in the season preview part, and I know I've just rubbished Mito, who are top after 11 games, so I can't get carried away with Yamagata being second after the same amount of matches. But I do think they're definitely a team that's kind of in progress and going in the right direction. They remind me a little bit, just in terms of the feel of like the Okayama from maybe like seasons past, where Okayama kind of flirted with being a sort of top 6 team and then never quite got there. I'm not sure if Yamagata will be able to sort of go one better and actually keep hold of a top 6 place. But I think there's a lot of good quality in the team. The likes of Jefferson Bayohano, who was at Mito before he moved to Yamagata. But he's a kind of streamlined, slimmed down striker this season a little bit. He's been doing a good job of leading the line. And lots of other good players in the team. Like, I think Shuto Minami scored the winner at the weekend away at Fukuoka, and he's, you know, former Verdy player, so I've seen, I know his quality, I know that he's good. And then Machida, former Machida defender, I think Kai Miki is in the team as well. I think they have the potential to hang around, and I think possibly that I think they will finish higher than Mito come the end of the season. I've got to give the coach some credit as well. Shigetoshi Hasebe, he has been in charge at least once, possibly even twice, at Jeff in the past. And just get the Jeff mention in early. It just kind of goes to show that they are, I think Jeff are one of these sides where you almost can't judge managers with how they do there, because quite a lot of managers, in inverted commas, fail at Jeff and then do well somewhere else. And I think that's definitely the case here. Maybe he's probably learned a lot about management from being at Jeff. Is applying that knowledge at the ND Soft Stadium. So yeah, I think Yamagata are doing well, and I think Stuart mentioned something important about Mito, which is they're kind of awkward. They're an awkward customer to actually play against and break down. I think the same is true of Yamagata to some extent, especially when they're at home. So they're kind of building a sort of aura. I think that teams maybe look at their upcoming fixture, and if it's Yamagata, they kind of, oh no, it's going to be a tough game. We know we're going to be up against well-organised outfits. So yeah, I see them sticking around at least until the hot summer. Until the hot summer is upon us, I think.
John, did you just say? Sorry, this is a question. Like, did you just say Hasebe's in charge at Yamagata?
Yeah, isn't that my?
No, he's in Mito.
Right. Oh, it's Kiyama. Sorry. Yeah. So it is another former Jeff man, but it's just a different one. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. That important clarification. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to you. Yeah, it's Golden Week, you know. We might make some errors. Yeah. yes. Sorry. So yes, Hasebe at Mito, doing well with what he's learned at Jeff, and yeah, Kiyama at Yamagata doing well with what he's learned at Jeff. That's the
and
critical
Jeff
point.
Jeff not doing well. Yeah.
Jeff learning nothing. Nobody learning anything. Yeah. sorry, Ben.
No, that's okay. Yeah, former Jeff managers are liberated as soon as they. Leave the Fukuari, and yes, they go on to bigger and better things by the looks of it.
Yes, that's right. There's just so many of them now, I can't keep track.
All right then, so yeah, the top three, let's reset it after 11 match days. Mito top on 23 points, Yamagata second, a goal of goal difference ahead of Omiya. They both have 21 points. So, Stuart, I'll come to you next about the three teams that round out the top six, therefore currently occupying the other playoff places. They are Kofu, who are fourth on 20 points, Kashiwa fifth on 19, and Kanazawa, who edged Ryukyu out of the top six with their win in the final game of match day 11 away at Yamaguchi. So, Kofu and Reysol, along with Kanazawa, how are they tracking? I think we mentioned earlier that, Reysol were most people's prediction. If there was going to be a Sean Onesca bolter who ran away with things, it was more likely to be them. But they have, they've really struggled to hit their stride. Still just 9 goals from 11 games. They have a terrific defence, almost as good as Mito's. But, I might be stealing your thunder there. So, Kofu, Reysol and Kanazawa.
Yeah, well, I'll take them in the order that they appear in the table. I mean, Kofu, they were unlucky not to win at Ehime this weekend. They had plenty of chances. I think they hit the post two or three times, and Ehime keeper Okamoto made plenty of really good saves. So I think they can count themselves unlucky not to come away with 3 points. Basically, they've been playing exactly as I thought they would play. You know, they've got that kind of the razor sharp edge up front. You know, they've got Dudu, they've got Peter Utaka, they've got Koichi Sato, they've got Junior Barros off the bench, they've got Yokotani playing in behind them. They're a good side, and they look a threat every time they go forward. And like I said, I think it was just a mixture of bad luck and bad finishing that stopped them from taking all 3 points from Ehime. Kashiwa, I mean, we think they should be doing better, but they're only 4 points off the top, and they haven't really hit their stride. And I think one thing that I did see this weekend, because they drew 0-0 at home against Yokohama FC, I think, they missed some chances in that game as well. Like, Cristiano was pinging in crosses from all over the place, and good crosses as well that... they just their strikers just couldn't convert on the day. And I think that I'm not too sure of the context behind it, but I know some of their fans are not particularly impressed with how they've started the season. I know there was a big banner that was put up behind the Kashua goal, asking the players to come together and to start playing a bit more. So maybe that's something just to keep an eye on. I mean, obviously, we all believe that Nelsinho is the guy to get them promoted, and they have on paper the best squad in the division, but it just, for whatever reason, just hasn't really clicked so far. And yeah, I mean, with Kanazawa, I think Mito have kind of stolen their thunder a little bit, but Kanazawa having themselves a really good season thus far. A very impressive win on Sunday at Yamaguchi. I know Yamaguchi haven't been doing very well so far, but Yamaguchi are in a bit of a false position because I think they're a good side. But Kanazawa were better than them on the day. The 2-0 win was deserved. I don't know if you've only seen the old goal show, you won't have seen Clooney's first half miss, right? I don't think you've seen it. It was much, much, much more difficult to miss than it was to score. I think it was only 2 yards out and he put it wide. But he managed to get his goal in the second half. He looks a decent player. He looks similar in what he does to Juanma. I think he's a bit more kind of, he's a bit slimmer, but he occupies defenders and he's got good movement and he's good in the air. And yeah, he's fitted in quite well to that Kanazawa lineup. And I think they've been doing really well this year, and because I thought they would struggle, but they've surpassed my expectations already. And I think that if Mito hadn't been doing so well, I think Kanazawa would be the team that we'd be talking about right now. So Colfer and Reysol, we expected them to be up there, but yeah, Kanazawa are our surprise entrance as well, I would think.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for Kashua to come correct and get it right, I think. You know, if we remember in the past some sort of bigger sides, if you like, and by J2 standards, I think we can put Kashua in that bracket. You know, they have struggled initially upon being relegated. If you think about FC Tokyo, their sort of one season in J2, Ben, until sort of late May, until Golden Week, they hadn't quite got it right. I think a lot of fans were perhaps worried and biting their nails then, and then it did come together and they ended up winning the league pretty comfortably. So I do think with Tashua there's a possibility that they'll do better, they'll improve. But yeah, just interesting, any team with Cristiano sort of going three games without scoring, you know, three straight nil-nils in the league. It's four straight nil-nils if you add in the last Nabisco Cup game or Levan Cup game that they played. So yeah, I think perhaps it'd be more concerning if they're not making chances. As Stuart mentioned, I think that the chances are being created, but they're just not putting them away. And yeah, you just think if they keep making chances and eventually they do click and start winning and it becomes a habit, then they'll be all right. Same for Kofu. I think, you know, we mentioned that they've got firepower and a lot of quality. They also had a really strong sort of second half or finish to the season last year. So I think they'll be up there. And yeah, I agree. I think for me, Kanazawa probably being the most impressive side, because we didn't really expect anything, you know, coming into the season. Whereas I think Mito have proven tough customers for other teams on numerous occasions during the league. And Kanazawa, a soft touch last season. So for them to be doing well, and yeah, like you say, not just winning but outplaying some good teams as well, is impressive. And yeah, I think Clooney, I did not see his miss that Stuart mentioned, because I'm guilty as charged. I just watched the All Goal Show before we started recording. But as the goal that he did score was extremely well taken, and he scored a few well taken goals since coming into the team. And I think was it Oishi scored the other goal, didn't he? And he's also quite a cool customer in front of goal and a good finisher. And it's the funny thing about J2. I think if you're okay at the back and you're okay in midfield and you have players who are clinical and put chances away up front, then you'll do well. And it was, you know, I'd imagine a player like Clooney and Kashua's team, for example, they might have won a few more games than they've done recently. So yeah, I think all three of them will be top six, top eight from what I've seen so far. And Kanazawa, in a it's sort of been the most impressive one, you know, in many ways, just because of the expectations that we had or didn't have for them, you know, before the season started.
All right, so John, I'll come straight back to you because obviously you weren't around for episode one that Stuart and I have recorded with Steve, Jeff, and Nick. So yeah, kind of want to wrap up the rest of the top half of the table with any newsworthy teams you think are worthy of a mention. So if they include Omiya, Ryukyu, or Kyoto, then feel free to weigh in on any or all of those three teams. But yeah, so we wrap up the top half of the table with Nagasaki in 10th and Niigata in 11th. Is there anything between 6th place Kanazawa and 11th place Niigata that you wanted to touch on, including those three teams that were discussed in episode one?
No, I don't have anything to add, and I think we've had experts for a few of these teams in episode one who know a lot more than me. I think maybe Niigata in 11th have a chance, maybe if they can just get it together and win a few more games. I know they've had only 3 wins so far, but probably if they could have just grabbed a couple more, they might have been a bit higher. So I expect to see them maybe climb a little bit more. And Nagasaki, I think last time we talked about them having a rough start, and what I'd seen of them when I tend to catch snippets of live games these days over the weekend. Whenever I'd seen Nagasaki, I'd been pretty singularly unimpressed with what they were doing. So I'm seeing them in 10th and 4 games unbeaten suggests to me that they might be getting the mix right slowly but surely. And perhaps I think both of those two, they're 10th and 11th now, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them rising up the table sooner rather than later. I don't know if Stuart maybe wants to mention any of those teams.
Yeah, I agree with John that Niigata could kind of, if they get their act together, could be one of the teams that kind of get back up into the playoff zone. I think they were actually, we haven't really spoken about the game that they played at Mito, but they have plenty of chances. They've got this Brazilian kind of attacking midfielder, Silvinho, who is busy and gets involved in good places, and he's kind of pulling the strings. And I watched, I actually watched the full game of Mito and Niigata. And there's a guy that Niigata had called Bioma Watanabe, who I hadn't heard of him before. So, but he played really well. He played on the right side of kind of midfield or in the winger's role, and I found out that he went straight from university to Ingolstadt in the Bundesliga second division, I think it's second division, and so he made the kind of the strange career move to go straight from university to a European league, and now he's back obviously in the J League, and he looks a really good player. It's the first time I've kind of seen him in depth, and kind of really impressed with his directness, and he's big and he's physical, and I think I look forward to seeing some more of him in the coming months or so. But yeah, like I think Niigata impressed me more than Nagasaki and Yokohama thus far. Kyoto, as we spoke about with Nick earlier, I think they're going in the right direction. They're missing a striker is what they're missing. And yeah, we've been down this road with Fajiano Okayama before, so I'm not going to walk down that road again anytime soon. So yeah.
All right then. Well, Okayama at least were able to get on the score sheet in match day 11. Loads of other teams were unable to manage that, but Lee Yong Jae equalised for them at home against Tokyo Verde. So two more drop points for Verde, which we might come on to with John as we work our way down the table after Yuta Narawa's opener in the first half. All right, so yes, there are a lot of big fish in the bottom half of the table after 11 match days. So, yeah, basically we're a quarter of the way through the season. And, yeah, I think, what is it, three of the teams that were in the playoff places last season are still in the bottom half of the table. The Yokohama FC and Machida lead off the bottom half in 12th and 13th. Then we have pre-season playoff fancied by some, Tokushima, Ehime, Tokyo Verde in 16th, and then as we work our way down the table, yes, Fukuoka are still there, of course, and Gifu as well, who we'll talk about with Stuart. So, John, within your sphere of influence, of course, in the Kanto region, Yokohama FC, Machida and Verde, who were all in the playoff places last season, have all got off to rocky starts. Have you seen any signs from any of those three teams in recent weeks that they might be, I don't know, might be even capable of going on an Omiya-esque run of four or five straight wins that could haul them up to in and around the playoff places?
Yeah, interesting comparison with Omiya, I think. If we talk about Yokohama FC first, then I was going to say in answer with Omiya in mind, I can't see any of these teams matching Omiya's run because they don't have the same quality. But to qualify that, I think for Yokohama FC, it's a case that they don't have the same quality as Omiya right through the team. But I think up front, in terms of strikers, attacking players, Yokohama FC do have more to offer this season. I went to see them against Jeff. Two rounds ago, right, in round 10. And the first half performance wasn't anything to get excited about from Yokohama, really. But in the second half, actually, Iba was on the bench. But once they brought him on, and they also brought on the 17-year-old Koki Saito, who's probably been discussed before on the pod, but he's not exactly a household name, probably even in his own house just yet. But he is a good striker, I think, or certainly has the makings of one. So I think in terms of firepower, Yokohama FC will be moving in up the table. Perhaps not as much quality in other areas of the team. Machida, I think, and this is just really regurgitating points that the you know, the Machida fans, Fortress Nozota, Fellas Alvista, that we know have mentioned, they are also short of a striker, a kind of focal point for the attack. And that recently, I think they played Omiya two games ago, and Yuki Nakashima, who's kind of the one of the most important forwards, he got injured. He's going to be out for around 6 weeks. And when I saw that tweet, I thought, oh, that's a big blow for them. But I was actually just looking before recording at the kind of goal scoring stats for Machida this season. And Yuki Nakashima's only scored one. Even though in my mind he's a key man, and the team as a whole's only got 8 in the first 11 games. I think Koji Suzuki, who left Machida to go to Ikki, scored 8 on his own already this season. So I think for Machida, it's a case of they have to either extract or squeeze more goals out of Kamen Togashi up front, who has been working very hard, and I don't have a knock against him personally, but I think he was brought in pretty much de facto to replace Koji Suzuki, and has certainly not done it in terms of goals yet. So Naoki Soma has to find a way to get more goals out of the players he's got. And Dorian Babunski's there as well, isn't he? But hasn't scored. Or is it David? One of the Babunskis is there and hasn't scored yet this season. I think they might need more players. They might need somebody to actually come in up front, to be honest. And for Verde, shall I take... Stuart, do you want to comment before...
I don't have anything to add on. Okay. Although I find it weird that Iba doesn't start for Yokohama FC.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one because they started up front with one striker against Jeff last weekend, and it was a low energy Toshima, Akira Toshima, and he's not really the guy. He does get into good positions and he does score even now and again. But, yeah, it was a strange one. I mean, if Iba's... I think the key thing is how fit Iba is. I'm not sure if he's 100%. I mean, Yokohama FC, and, you know, all teams do, especially in J2, they might have a player on the bench who is not... who maybe shouldn't be, or maybe isn't fit enough to play too long. Hisato Sato started for Jeff, for example, and you kind of know there's just no way he's going to do the 90 minutes. And I think he ended up going off after about 57 minutes. So yeah, it's a difficult one. I think if you lose the game and your best player started on the bench, then you'll face criticism. But on the other hand, it can go do. And he was brought on at half time at Iba and pretty much turned the game against Jeff. So it can be a masterstroke, or it can be, you know, as a manager, I think that's the core way you can get criticised both ways, can't you? So yeah, but no, I agree with you. It's strange to see a player of his ability not starting a game. But I have a feeling it's a fitness. Well, I assume it must be a fitness issue.
What about Verdi then?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Gary White perhaps has blocked you now, Ben, I suppose, on there. Perhaps doesn't want to come back on and answer questions. I don't know if they're doing as badly as it looks. So I got to see them close up against Mito a few rounds ago, as I mentioned, and they didn't seem to be doing a great deal wrong, from what I could tell, but I'm not sure. They're certainly... again, I think goals are looking like they're going to be hard to come by this season. I think if you took Ryohei Hayashi's goals out of the side, then they might be an even worse situation than they are. And I think it's probably very frustrating that they took the lead this weekend with a bit of a goal at so from Yuta Narawa, who doesn't score very often, but it was a really good goal. But then they were pegged back, and it was our normally reliable Stuart, our favourite, Naoto Kami Fukumoto, who... sort of came out as Okayama got a corner, and he sort of wandered out and initiated contact with a forward, it seemed to me.
Yes.
And then wanted the free kick, even though he'd sort of started it and is allowed to use his hands.
Yes.
So I'm not really sure. Yeah, I think maybe it's a case. I think two wins from 11 games is bad. You know, everyone's got at least two wins, haven't they? Kagoshima bottom, they've got two wins from 11 games, so it's not all gone well for Verdi, I don't think. But then again, they've only lost four of the games, which would put them in. You know, Nagasaki are 10th, they've only lost four. I think they'll be okay. I don't imagine any relegation danger, and I'm not sure. Maybe because they've got a new coach and in the close season, a lot of the sort of more talented young players left. Maybe Gary White's got a bit of a free hit maybe this season. Maybe the front office has told him just get the team playing how you want, and then maybe next season they'll be more of a challenge for the playoffs. But yeah, nothing. I don't see enough goals and enough quality attacking players there now to get them any higher than maybe the mid table this season. But again, as you mentioned, we make predictions quite often, and we're getting them wrong sometimes, so yeah.
Well, I think they were a little bit unlucky against Okayama. Like they had a first half penalty saved. Hanato had it saved.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you tack that on, you know, to Narawa's kind of excellent strike, I mean, you have a 2-1 win there. But I mean, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. You know, but in general, I think you're right. I think goals are a little bit hard to come by. It's not that they're not creating chances, because they are. Obviously, they've got a lot of kind of good creative players. Sato is playing well. He's always creating chances, but I think they need to find someone to regularly kind of put them in the back of the net. But I think I mentioned this in the first part with Nick from Kyoto. Like, Verdi aren't the only team by any stretch of the imagination that are looking for a 15 to 20 goal a season striker. I mean, kind of, there are lots of teams that need them, and Verdi just another one. Like, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be in mid-table safety before too long. Like you said before, I mean, it's been a tumultuous might be a bit strong, but it's been a an off season of kind of big people leaving the club. Obviously Latina was one, Ibayashi the captain as well, Douglas Vieira as well, and so yeah, you know, you take those those leaders and those goals out the side, and it takes a little bit of time to work in any solutions, really. But I think
with Lottina leaving, they're almost starting from scratch, I think, in terms of the playing style and the kind of identity, if you like. So that's just going to take time, I think. And you're right about Forge. A kind of funny theme, just to make a wider point on J2, if I may, this is, yeah, we see a few teams that they're playing the formation and the tactics that kind of demand a 10 or 15 goal a season, man, but they don't have one. Mm. So it's kind of interesting sometimes to see teams doing that, whereas you think maybe the coach might go back to the training ground, the drawing board, and say, okay, we don't have anybody who can hold the ball up for, you know, on the halfway line. So we'll play in a different way that doesn't require that sort of thing. You almost wonder if managers sometimes, they want to have like highlights and videos that they can go to the front office with and say, look, we're playing like this. If we could add such and such in the transfer window, then we'll win more games. You know, they're almost kind of trying to make a point, if you like, of not having these players. Obviously, I'm not a professional football manager, so I'm sure it's much more difficult than that. But sometimes it's surprising to see. The Yokohama game even is a good example last weekend, where you see a one top, as they call it in Japanese, one forward, and it's a guy that just Toshima is just not mobile, and you're wondering like what is the thinking behind that? You know, how is he going to occupy three defenders by himself when he just stands around the penalty spot pretty much? So there's been a few interesting formation and tactical choices made by various teams this season, where you're thinking, Do you think this guy that you've picked is going to score 20 goals, or are you trying to make the point that you know he isn't, and you're sort of asking for help in a very pointed way?
Yeah, I mean, with Verdi, it's a hard luck tale for Gary White so far, and I mean, you know, you want to get your violins out 11 games into the season, but I mean, they look set to. I don't know, to go on at some decent sort of a run after, you know, an away draw at Tokushima, winning 2-0 at home over Kashiwa, and then drawing 0-0 with Mito, who, as we know, are the leaders after 11 games. So then, to lose the lead and then lose the game in the 90th minute away at Yamagata, Kazumasa Wisato scores a 95th minute equaliser. When they're winning against the Ryukyu the next week, it's just one loss in seven. So if you want to be glass half full, then
you can spin it the other way.
I'm not sure if Gary's. I don't know if they haven't quite got enough miles in their legs yet, where they can't see out these games. But I mean, letting up a 95th minute equaliser is surely hard luck. That's, you can't put that down to fitness. But I mean, I would hope I'm selling Gary's good books, because he's certainly in mine, and I certainly hope that, he's given a chance to see this out. I mean, a long way to go, John.
Well, I think, it's good that you make those points on the kind of counter-argument, because it is a case definitely of the, you know, there are fine margins in football. It's a low-scoring sport, and, the difference of, you know, an extra 30 seconds of injury time being played can lead to you letting in a goal. I think if you're a Verdi supporter, I think Gary White for now is okay, on the basis that they're playing okay, and they've had a tough ride with luck. And I think somehow they've ended up short of central defenders as well, which hasn't helped, I don't think. They also have one Brazilian forward, Walmerson, who has not been fit since he signed, really. I don't know. I know he's played once or appeared once, but not been fit. So perhaps if he comes in and he's good, then that will get them goals. I suppose we should mention Leandro, who is, you know, should be a 15, 20 goal a season, and it's not happened for him, I think, maybe due to injury as well. But I have to be consistent, because I think I've chastised Gifu in the past for perhaps leaning heavily on the hard luck story, for maybe seasons at a time. And so I have to be consistent, say, with Verdi. I think next time we get together, end of May, if we're still talking about, there's been a lot of last-minute goals, or they've taken the lead and not held on to it, then I think there's a possibility it's a systemic thing, because I'm not sure I think if you give managers too many outs to blame other things, then they'll always take them, won't they? You know, it's you never hear a manager like credit a referee for winning them the game in a post-match press conference, but you'll often hear them say this decision cost us the game or this individual cost the game. So I think after 11 games, like what I'm saying is I think it's fair. I think you can say they've had hard luck over 11 games. If we get to 21 games and we're still in the same place, then you have to wonder, is there something wrong with the mentality or something wrong with what the players are being asked to do? So yeah, let's keep an eye on that one, put a pin in that one for next time.
Okay, point well made, John. All right, so yeah, in the bottom half of the table, only four teams swapped positions in after match day 11, obviously due to the plethora of draws. So yeah, Ehime FC and Verdi moved up thanks to the losses from Fukuoka and Yamaguchi. So, Stuart, I don't know if we need to bother about talking about Fukuoka anymore because they're pretty much an afterthought, and they've made an absolute shambles of my prediction that they would finish in the top six. So this is going to be pretty painful, but it's just been a diabolical stretch for FC Gifu here. And, the draw away at Tochigi on Sunday, I don't know, might have just been a relief just to stop this run of four straight losses. Obviously, you would have wanted to claim 3 points against the team immediately above you in the table, but when you get an equaliser with 5 minutes to go, I guess you've got to be pretty happy with the point, and you move on to the next game, which, as we've talked about in episode one, is at home against Ryukyu.
Oh, most definitely. Like, yeah, beggars can't be choosers. And, you know, we played pretty well in the first half of the game in Tochigi. Missed some glorious chances. I mean, I talked about Clooney's miss for Kanazawa at Yamaguchi. Our fullback, Yuki Aizu, missed from 2 yards out as well. And in the first half, and yeah, half-time was 0-0, and it was all looking positive. But in the second half, Tochigi came out, and they were much better and scored through Oguro. Should have had another that our goalkeeper, Yanole Sivas, saved. And then, yeah, about 5 minutes from the end, Yuya Yamagishi scored our first goal in, I think it was five games or something like that. And, it took us off the bottom of the table. I think it's difficult to be objective, but I think Gifu are a better side than Tochigi. But I think both those teams are pretty kind of low on the pecking order in J2 this year. So, yeah, it's been a rough month for Gifu. One goal, lots of defeats, plenty of rainy weather. The sooner we see the back of April, the better, really. It's been a pretty bad month.
Just to jump in, Stuart, you were bemoaning the kind of growing injury list at Gifu, I saw on Twitter. Is that a critical, do you think, if all those players, well, just a stupid question, I suppose, if all those players had been fit, April would have been a bit easier, a bit kinder on the team, or is it the tactics and the formation that's the problem, or is it just that there were key players that would have played that weren't available, sort of thing?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think three of the players that I mentioned, Kitatani, Yanagisawa, and Miyamoto all got injured in games, so it's nothing to do with the training.
Sure.
They were injured during the game, and Nagakura, who's the other one, was injured during the game, but aggravated it in warming up, I think, in one of the training sessions, and so they're all match related. Yeah, It's only a small sample size, but when Yanagisawa, our right fullback, and Nagakura, our left fullback, and Kitatani, our first choice centre back, when they played, Gifu won the first two home games, and I think they drew away from home as well. So it's a very small sample size, but obviously being without them kind of exposes a lack of depth behind.
I think that's fair. I think when you get to the sort of the bottom third of J2, then you really do see that there are some teams who have like a best 11 or best 14, but that's it's hard for them when they're asked to go beyond that. I think, to be honest, I would even put, just to call back Verdi briefly, in terms of defenders, they're in that position, I think, where if they have two injured defenders, then they're really struggling to actually, not just to get reliable, but to just get bodies into the team to play. And yeah, it's something that for listeners like me, you know, I watch a lot of, been watching a lot of the European Champions League games where teams have got like, oh, 100 cap player A is injured, so another guy with 100 caps of his country comes in and plays. And you can, if you squint, you can't tell the difference. It's not like that often at that for those teams at the sharp end, or you know, at the bottom of J2, where if you do have two or three players that, if you're the manager, if two or three players that you were hoping would play can't play, then you're doing the equivalent of sort of like phoning round on a Sunday morning trying to get people out of bed almost. So, well, that's an exaggeration, but yeah, I think those mitigating circumstances of injuries for Gifu, I think, and this we do need to take into account. And if those players all come back and they're fit, then I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be okay this year.
Are you still allowing yourself to think that that's a possibility, Stuart, or have these four straight losses before Sunday just smacked any optimism out of you that you might have had at the time of our last specials recording?
Well, it's not the defeats per se. I'm used to dealing with defeats, but it's the lack of goals. I mean, Gifu are the lowest scorers, well, joint lowest scorers in the league with Kagoshima. There's only 6 goals scored so far. 1 goal scored in the month of April, and it's quite difficult to watch. And it's quite, I mean, like we mentioned with Tokyo Verde, I mean, there are some hard luck stories. I mean, again, in the game against Nagasaki, Ryan De Vries missed a first half penalty when the score was 0-0. Gifu went on to lose that game 4-0. So there are things you can point to that say, oh, if A had been different, then the game might have turned out differently. But I think it's the constant kind of no goals. That's the energy sapping kind of thing. Like, we want to see... We want to see ambition. Ambition's the wrong word, but we want to see a bit of kind of conviction going forward, and that there hasn't been a lot of that, particularly in April. There's just been a lot of effort, a lot of hard work, some mischances, but in general, the attacking play hasn't been up to standard, to be quite frank. It's different from last year. And so something kind of needs to change, and it needs to change pretty promptly. Maybe just getting out of April and just getting into May, something might turn around like that. But yeah, it's a bit difficult to be optimistic when you're not kind of scoring goals, really. So that's...
Is there any pressure building on Aoki, Stuart? Something I've noticed just anecdotally, being at stadiums and kind of keeping in touch with the sort of Japanese media coverage in J2. I don't know if you want to chime in on this for J1, if you want, Ben Bridgley, but fans are less patient in general now, I think, than they were when I first started following the J League. Quite often foreigners who came to watch games or were involved with it would kind of comment on how players were under a bit less pressure, managers were under a bit less pressure. Fans tended to do a lot more sort of unconditional support here than maybe England, for example. But I'm just not sure. I sense that turning a little bit with some of the so-called bigger teams in the J League. I was watching that Twitter video that's doing the rounds of Tulsu's president, for example, getting a rough ride. From the kind of ultras, the Sagantinos there at the at Tulsa. So I wondered if, obviously we know Aoki had pretty tragic personal circumstances last season, and I think maybe just common decency kind of demands that you're not talking about someone's job for a certain period of time after that. But I just wonder, is he under any? Do fans, you know, what's the temperature on Oki at the moment? Is he safe? Any misgivings from the supporters there, the hardcore fans, or how is he seen at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one because, like, he did bring this style to Gifu, and he did bring kind of he did bring good players in, and he made players better as well.
So he's got some credit in the bank.
Yeah, but I think he's well on the way to using that, to be perfectly honest. I think there are certain sections of the support that they don't want him fired by any stretch, but they're getting a little bit that the patience is wearing a bit thin. And I think it's, like I said in the previous answer, it's just like, you know, you turn up and you want to see, well, you want to see goals, you want to see wins, but you want to see a bit of conviction and a bit of thrust or whatever word you want to use.
Swashbuckling,
like attacking poise and style, and we haven't seen that, and it's
It's funny. One thing I like to see, it doesn't matter to me so much if the team is able to execute its game plan or not when I'm watching a game, but I like to be able to see what the game plan was.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think, again, I think at half time at the game I was at last week, Jeff were 1-0 up against Yokohama, and they basically just didn't, in the second half, I couldn't work out what they were trying to. Like, I thought you either try and defend that lead or you go and add to it, but they just sort of didn't do anything. Mm. And then it's hard to make a case that they didn't, you know, they were hard done to when they lost the game. So it's like, I'm not sure what you were told to do or what you were trying to do, but I couldn't see, you know, there wasn't any plan. There wasn't any idea. And I think that as a fan, just speaking purely as a fan now, that's very frustrating when you are like, well, if I go to work and I don't know what I'm doing, I ask somebody or, you know, I get some help kind of thing. You see, sometimes players are, what are they trying to execute sometimes? As soon as that's difficult to work out for the average match-going fan, if they're watching their team and they're thinking, I'm not sure what the manager's trying to do here or what the players have been told, that can be the start of a slippery slope, I think.
Well, I think Gifu have got a couple of big games coming up. They've got Rikyu on Sunday.
And good then time to play them, I think, isn't it? Good time to play Rikyu, I think, at the moment.
Well, Rikyu might well think the same about coming to Gifu, fair, you know?
Yeah, and fair, yeah.
But, like, so they've got Rikyu this Sunday coming, and then the following Sunday they've got Kanazawa at home. And I think, like what we said with Verdi, I think right now there are mitigating circumstances, possibly, but if it starts, if we're in the same position with the same goal scoring problems at the end of May, then I think it becomes an immediately more serious situation, I think. Because then, like, we'll be almost, not halfway through, but we'll be like a third of the way through the season. And, you know, there's only, like we said before, there's only so much that we can say is down to luck before it becomes a systemic issue. So, yeah.
I feel like Ben's penciling in like a 4-hour showdown pod with Verdi and Gifu for the end of May.
We'll see how it goes. We certainly hope things will turn around for Gifu in the coming weeks, Stuart. Ryukyu at home on Sunday is as good a place as any for your side to start to turn it around. And obviously we wish Jeff all the best as well. But as I said in episode one, let football be the real winner. All right, so guys, do you have any other of the clubs in the bottom half of the table that you wanted to touch on before we wrap up?
No, nothing too heavy. This is a direct steal from Gifu Richie. So perhaps Stuart, you can correct me if I'm not right on this. Is it right that Tochigi are moving to a new stadium next year?
They are.
But it's a multi-purpose stadium with a big track. A lot of fans aren't happy.
Yeah,
justifiably. So that was the only thing I wanted to mention. It's non-football related, but it's the current stadium, Tochigi Green Stadium, doesn't meet the J1 standards. Is that right? That's why they're...
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So that, yeah, that's an interesting one. Going backwards to go forward sort of thing.
Oh, anything from you, Stuart, on any other teams that are in and around Gifu?
I'll just state that Avispa are in a lot of trouble. And I'll just leave it there. I think everyone knows what what we mean by that. They've got some real issues there. And I so
the sooner they get back to their regular stadium, the better.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Mm.
All right. Well, I will leave you both with a question without notice. At the time of the last J2 special, Omiya were 16th. After 11 games, they are third. So which team from the current bottom half of the table, so from Yokohama FC down, are the most likely to have done an Omiya and be in the playoff places by the time we record the next J2 special at the end of May? Stuart, I'll come back to you for your answer, please.
Tokushima.
Okay, John?
Tokushima Vortis.
John, what do you think?
I have a lot of caveats, but I'll just be very brief. Ehime.
You're going to have to go into your caveats, I think, John.
Well, there's not a lot. I'm literally, I haven't gone mad. Well, I don't think I've gone mad. The bottom half of the table does not have a lot of quality this year. I think we've talked about the top half. I think the teams at the very top five or six is stronger than last year for me. But I think the bottom half looks pretty shonky. And I think any team that will win, I mean, in order to get up to third, you only need a couple of wins, I think, at the moment, three wins. I think Ehime, one of these teams that they fluctuate. I don't think they're ever going to be in their current form higher than mid-table. But I think you're asking about May, right? Not the end of the season. I think Ehime, why not? Why not? Reiwa, Ehime, it's all happening. I think they'll... Tokushima is the obvious answer, I think. So I was going to say them, so I have to go. And then Tokushima, yeah, Ehime 1 point behind Tokushima, so it's not as wild, not as outlandish.
All right, that's quite a bolter, John. But yeah, fair enough. The two Shikoku clubs are our two guest predictions to bolt up the table. So fair enough. And all right, well, yes, I think that's where we'll leave it then for our April J2 special. This has been the second episode of the week. And, well, yeah, guys, absolutely tremendous stuff as usual. Stuart, I do have to say a special thanks to you for sticking with me all the way through. You the real MVP of this J2 special. Absolutely tremendous stuff. I very much appreciate all of your time. Thank you very much, mate.
Oh, no worries. Anytime. Yeah, enjoyed it. And yeah, hopefully Gifu can get a win. Sorry, Jeff. But yeah, look forward to next time.
All right, chin up, Stuart. Yes, I'm sure things will turn around pretty sharpish. And John, yes, great to get you on and get your thoughts on the second tier once again. And yeah, look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Laben. It's always a pleasure. I hope everybody in Japan enjoys their Golden Week and everybody elsewhere enjoys whatever it is they're up to in the football.
All right, then. So that is it for the J-Talk podcast for another week. The part two of our J2 special is in the books. My thanks again to Stuart Smith and John Steele, and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to wrap up another busy weekend in the J-League. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
Hello, hello.
Oh, there you are. How are you going?
Yeah, hello, hello. Wept. Yeah. So
there must have been some good sushi, John.
Yeah.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.